Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need, but there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
Welcome back. It's 34 after. Thanks very much for staying with me. Thanks for being part of my day. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already and you're still with us, we consider that a sign of a high intelligence. You're going to be glad you hung out with me because we got our good friend Dr. Robert McTeer back on the show. Bob is the former president of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank and a former member of the Federal Open Market Committee, the group that's meeting today and it met yesterday, and that are in charge of the monetary policy of the United States and in many ways the world. And he's now currently a distinguished fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis, ncpa.org, which is an organization I've been telling you about for a long time. Outstanding think tank group of folks there. And he's our good friend. He's been a member of our Brain Trust since 1999. Bob McTeer, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim.
It's good to have you back. Bob, the Federal Open Market Committee is meeting. This is one of the, twice a year, I guess it is, they meet 2 days.
That used to be the case for many years, but Mr. Bernanke last year decided the plate was so full, they've added two or three more of those two-day meetings.
Yeah, I think you're right. Why do they need an extra day?
Well, I'm not sure. They shouldn't have been having two all along.
Yeah.
When you start around 9 o'clock and you end a little after lunch, that's pretty quick.
Yeah, that's right. Because when they have a 1 day meeting, the announcement about what they decided on the interest rates is announced right after lunch. So you're right; it's really just a half day meeting, isn't it?
I think probably the best explanation is that they need the same amount of time to do the policy thing, but they've got all these new programs going, new activities that need a little bit of discussion.
Speaking of that activity, is the Fed about to get a little bit too complicated? I mean, for a long time you used to say that the Fed's only tool is a blunt instrument, basically the adjustment of rates and the control of money, of the supply of money. But they've got a lot more tools now. Are they getting too many tools?
Well, it's getting hard to follow, but let me say this. In the 1930s, Congress added a provision that under an emergency, the Fed could lend not just to member banks, but to anybody.
Uh-huh.
They did not use that emergency power until this crisis came up.
Right.
So you could say that all that's changed is that the Fed now has some programs that benefit non-member banks. They still do the same things, essentially.
Yeah.
They have a broader audience because they're using that emergency power. Also, they have made their terms a little more lenient because of the extraordinary circumstances. The length of the loans are larger, and the collateral is not quite as pristine.
Do you see any danger out there? Do you see any pitfalls, any potential problems? I mean, you know, and I don't want to lie. I don't mean to liken them to the group I'm about to say, but you know, we kind of let Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae get more and more involved, and they sort of, their portfolio kind of got a little bit overloaded. Could that happen with the Fed?
Right now, the Fed still only buys Treasury securities, and the mortgage-backed securities that it buys are from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, are guaranteed by them, which right now are government entities.
Right.
So there's not very much exposure of credit risk. Let me give you an analogy, I think, of what's happening. In 1907, we had this big panic, and there was no institution there to deal with it, so J.P. Morgan stepped forward and sort of dealt with it himself.
Mm-hmm.
And for 24 or 48 hours, the public was very grateful.
Right. He basically saved the country at that point.
Yeah, and but then after an initial period, people got to thinking, well, maybe we shouldn't have people so powerful and so rich that they mm-hmm. can do that much. And I think the Congress is reacting a little bit that way to the Fed.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, they knew what the Fed could do, but it really took them by surprise that the Fed had no, basically had no budget constraints
mm-hmm.
at the end of that. That's why it could act so fast while everybody else was frozen.
Right. Hold on to that thought. I want you to come back to that thought right after these messages and finish that. We'll be right back, folks. More to come with our good friend Bob McTeer. I told you we'd get smarter when Bob joined us. Stay with us. Little Robert Cray bringing us back, my favorite blues man, 17 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you check it out when you get a chance. We built it just for you. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And if you're on Twitter and you want to follow me there, I'm at Jim Blasingame. Dr. Bob McTeer is with us. He's a distinguished fellow with the National Center for Policy Analysis, former president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Bob, as we went to the break, you were talking about your analogy of J.P. Morgan basically saving the country back in, is that right? Was it?
Yeah, 07.
07, back in 100 years ago, and how the Fed was really born from that. Are you saying that when you talked about how Congress is feeling a little bit like that about the Fed, are you saying that the Fed thinks, I mean, that the Congress thinks the Fed may have too much power, or do you think it's a jealousy thing?
Well, it's probably a little of both. Here you have this enormous crisis. Everybody's wringing their hands about what to do. And Ben Bernanke steps in and starts doing some very important
mm-hmm.
things.
Some things he can do with more flexibility than they can do.
Right, because he basically can create money, as all central banks can. So he mm-hmm. didn't have to ask Congress for money to spend on this thing.
And if Bernanke, following this jealousy thing, if Bernanke winds up being a hero, they don't get any credit for that at the polls, do they?
That's right.
They can't have that, can they?
No. Well, unfortunately, you know, so much of this program has become unpopular, and all of it gets thrown in together into the same pool. And when I make speeches, I try to make distinctions between the different things that have been done and mm-hmm. say some of them are better than others.
Mm-hmm.
But the country's not in a mood to hear that. What they're reacting to is they're throwing our money at these big corporations to bail them out, and nobody's bailing me out.
Well, only one half of 1% of all the money that's been thrown out there has gone to small businesses, the sector of the marketplace that creates over half of the economy and 70 million paychecks.
Yeah. The problem is they do that in the aggregate, whereas some of the big ones...
we're not organized.
Yeah.
No, that's the problem. We're not organized,
maybe you may be better off.
Oh yeah.
Some of these that got this help later regretted it.
Well, see, we don't. That's the thing about small business, Bob, and you know this. We don't want a handout from the government. We just want the government to get out of our way.
Right.
And see, that's the problem that a lot of people don't get. But back to this, I want to come back to the Fed. Now the Fed's meeting, they're wrapping up their meeting today, and they're going to announce what they're going to do about interest rates. But nobody thinks they're going to raise rates. That's kind of a yawner right now. They're going to keep rates like they are. I think you'd agree with that, right?
Right.
But the language that they use, why does the language matter? Is it that granular? Is their influence that powerful and that granular that just the words they use can move markets?
Well, Chairman Greenspan sort of started that, and he started using language like, we expect conditions to be so-and-so for a considerable period. I think Bernanke's using extended period.
Mm-hmm.
Their motive for doing that is to give a little bit of certainty to people in their financial planning, that they're not going to be blindsided act on these lower interest rates, they're not going to be blindsided by having them shoot up on them.
Right.
I think there's a downside to that. When I was on the FOMC, I argued against using identical language.
Right.
And I would be arguing against using identical language now, because it means when you get ready to change, you've got to waste a lot of time changing your language.
Mm-hmm.
What? You got to waste at least one meeting loosening that language up so that you aren't, in effect, breaking a promise when you make a change.
How does all that, if you're a small business owner listening to all that, what can we take away from that to mean something to our businesses?
Well, I'm not sure you need to pay all that much attention to it. If you're a small business owner, you need to be in conditions like this, remaining fairly liquid and trying to control your risk and do all of the things that you would do normally,
mm-hmm.
except maybe be a little more careful about it right now.
But this is a good time from an interest rate standpoint. I mean, if you need to borrow money, this is not a bad time to do that, is it? Because the cost of money is pretty low.
Well, people are always talking about it being free because the short rates are so low. But I always remind myself that at least you got to pay it back.
Well, that's true. and of course, I always remind people that small business owners operate on in a world of prime plus. We don't usually get prime rate. We get prime plus 1, 2, 3, or 4, 5,
well, you
or 6.
Still, you probably still do, but the
oh,
prime
yeah.
is less now.
No, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
What's the? Some people are talking about the end of capitalism. I read recently that George Soros is actually, you know, he's shorting capitalism. He's betting against capitalism. I think that capitalism is not at fault with what's going on right now. I think if there's anything, government policies have been more a factor in what we've got, the problems we've got right now, than anything else. What do you think?
I agree with you, but people are focusing on the secondary effects. They're focusing on the third, fourth, fifth dominoes that occurred during this crisis, and they've almost forgotten that first domino that tipped over
mm-hmm.
and started the whole thing, which was the subprime lending on mortgages, and then the securitization and packaging of those mortgages into mortgage-backed
securities. But also the accommodative monetary policies of the Fed, right?
Well, the accommodative monetary policies of the Fed...
Meaning a lot of liquidity.
Meant that you could have lower mortgage rates.
Yeah.
It didn't necessarily do anything that said you had to have... make loans to people that couldn't repay them.
Right. It
made it easier to make loans. It shouldn't have made it easier to make bad loans.
Stand by. Quick break. Right back after these messages with Bob McTeer. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. We're visiting with our good friend Bob McTeer, Dr. Robert McTeer, Distinguished Fellow with the National Center for Policy Analysis. Bob, that's ncpa.org, right?
That's right.
And your own website is
BobMcTeer.com. BobMcTeer.com.
BobMcTeer, MCTEER.com. So check that out, folks. You can find Bob's blog there and all the other things. And of course, the NCPA is a great organization. We just had your chairman, Pete DuPont, on the show a couple of weeks ago, Bob.
Did he talk about the petition on health care?
Yeah, he did, but you can mention it again if you want to.
Well, NCPA traditionally has been in that field, research in that
mm-hmm.
field, and they had an online petition, and they got 1,300,000 signatures,
yeah.
which is a record, and they delivered it to Congress in an ambulance.
Yeah.
Well, I think petition called for government to stay out of health care.
Right, which is what I've been promoting for a long time, Bob, not just in the last year or so. I've been talking about that issue for almost as long as the NCPA has, maybe longer, But I'm glad that they did that, and I think that's one, that's an area that the government getting involved in healthcare, Bob, I think, is not contributing to the recovery of the economy. What do you think?
I agree, and I thought you were going to say something political, and I haven't.
Not me.
Well, you know, the elections that took place yesterday
are
maybe a sign of signal by the public that things are going in the wrong direction.
Well, in both of the states where their Democrat governor lost, In both states, the polls showed that health care was way down on the list of things that are important to the voters.
I believe it was the deficit and debt,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it was the economy. And in New Jersey, it was corruption was number two. but yeah, I mean, I think this is something that people are worried. I mean, everybody who has a job knows somebody who doesn't have a job. Everybody who has a house knows somebody who's lost their house. Just about, don't you think? I mean, we got 17 million people in America who are either unemployed or underemployed.
Friday, we're going to probably hear the official unemployment number go up to 9.9 or 10, but there are an awful lot of people that want to be working full-time that are working part-time.
That's right. That's the underemployed part. And, of course, that number that they're going to give you on Friday doesn't include everybody.
That's right.
It doesn't have everybody in there. Bob, back to capitalism. I believe capitalism is a beautiful organism that's not perfect. And the main way that it has a problem is when the politicians decide that they don't like the way it's moving. It's not giving them enough credit. It's not helping them in the polls. And capitalism is a long train that takes a while to turn around. And when it makes a mistake, sometimes it takes a little while to turn around. And sometimes that doesn't fit the reelection cycle of politicians. And I think that's when we get into trouble. What do you think?
Right, yeah. We ought to give politicians longer terms. So they'll have fewer years that are election years.
Yeah. Well, there are other things we ought to do while we're doing that, by the way. We ought to make them read the bills that they sign.
And accept the same health care plan they create for others.
Exactly. That's exactly right. That's another one. And also, if they don't do their job, if they don't get their work done before the end of the fiscal year, we don't pay them. How about that? I don't get paid if I don't do my job, Bob. What about you?
That sounds good to me.
Yeah, yeah. Bob, talk to us, in the time we have left, a couple of minutes, talk to us about where you think the economy is going over the next 12 to 24 months so small business owners can sort of be, you know, making some plans.
The third quarter GDP number was 3.5, and I doubt that the fourth quarter can match it.
Because of government stimulus, wasn't it?
There was a lot of government stimulus in that, and the problem is the consumer, who for years didn't save anything because his house and his 401k were both appreciating, mm-hmm. and now they've both depreciated, and in order to save more, which they need to do, they're going to have to cut back on consumption, and that's a great paradox.
Right.
You know, they need to save more, but if they save more, they consume less, and...
Mm-hmm.
And consumption is 70% of the economy.
Right.
So I don't think it's going to fall back into recession, but I think it's going to be a fairly weak and tepid year in 2010.
2010. It's going to be a trudging year. I mean, it's the recovery before we're going to be able to sing happy days are here again. We're talking. You think we could be talking 24, 36 months?
Yeah, I'm amazed that people are talking about recovery now based only on the GDP number,
yeah,
while
yeah.
Unemployment
right.
still increasing.
It's the reality is technically it's not we're not in a recession, but practically we still are, aren't we?
I'm not even sure technically. You know, the only the official arbiter of that is the Business Cycle Dating Committee of the
right.
National Bureau of Economic Research.
Right.
And they're going to have to say we're in recovery before
right.
we are.
Bob, I got to wrap it up. Thanks for being here. Good job today.
Okay, thanks,
Bob
Jeff.
McTeer, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back. I will be too. But it'll be tomorrow. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.